Hey guys, before I get to the episode, I want to take a moment to address the June 24th Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. This decision stripped away the legal right to have a safe and legal abortion. Regardless of your religious beliefs or beliefs in general, please understand that restricting access to comprehensive reproductive care, including abortion, threatens the health and independence of all Americans. This decision could also lead to the loss of other rights. I encourage you to do your research, look into real-life stories, and spread kindness. No one knows what people truly go through in these situations. Please be compassionate and try to empathize with others, especially if you have different beliefs. To learn more about what you can do to help, go to choice.crd.co. I will link several sources that you can find in the show notes and blog in the Resources tab. Please take care. Hey guys, thank you for tuning into this week and supporting the podcast. It really means a lot that you are here with me, and I hope you stick around. I've been in the process of writing several cases, and I'm trying to get ahead of schedule so that regularly scheduled episodes can fall when you expect them to. For those who have stuck around from the very beginning, thank you so much. We are coming up on our 2-year anniversary of having the podcast, and it's funny that I still haven't really gotten my act together. Also, I have started re-researching older cases that you can find on the Patreon. I got that subscription to newspapers.com, so a couple of re-recorded episodes might pop on your feed here and there. Getting into today's episode, I feel that these statistics I'm about to mention are very important to know in today's society. These statistics are more accurate than the ones I shared in Destiny Smothers episode, and that they needed to be shared. According to a 2019 study titled When Men Murder Women by the Violence Policy Center, Black women consisted of 14% of the population in the United States in 2019 and accounted for 28% of the women killed by men in single-victim, single-offender incidents. I pulled this next quote from that same study, and just keep in mind that the study consisted mostly of cisgendered Black women and used male and female terms. Quote, "Compared to a Black male, a Black female is far more likely to be killed by her spouse, an intimate acquaintance, or a family member than by a stranger. Where the relationship could be determined, 91% of Black females killed by males in single-victim, single-offender incidents knew their killers. More than 9 times as many Black females were murdered by a male they knew than were killed by male strangers in single-victim, single-offender incidents in 2019. Of Black victims who knew their offenders, 60% were wives, common-law wives, ex-wives, or girlfriends of the offenders. 91% of the homicides of Black females were interracial. As with female homicide victims in general, firearms were the weapon most commonly used by males to murder Black females in 2019. In the 451 homicides for which the murder weapon could be identified, 70% of Black female victims were shot and killed with guns. Of these gun homicides, 65% involved handguns. The number of Black females shot and killed by their husband or intimate acquaintance was nearly 4 times as high as the total number murdered by male strangers using all weapons combined in single-victim, single-offender incidents in 2019. The overwhelming majority of homicides of Black females by male offenders and single-victim, single-offender incidents in 2019 were not related to any other felony crime. Most often, Black females were killed by males in the course of an argument, most commonly with a firearm. In 2019, for the 358 homicides in which the circumstances between the Black female victim and male offender could be identified, 89% were not related to the commission of any other felony. Nearly 3/4 of non-felony-related homicides involved arguments between the Black female victim and male offender. 61% were shot and killed with guns during those arguments. End quote. These statistics don't lie, which makes me wonder why we see so much more coverage of white victim cases covered in the media. Do not get me wrong. Everyone deserves justice, everyone deserves police and detective work in their cases, and everyone deserves attention in their missing or murder case. We are all human. We all deserve the same treatment. But when are we going to accept that we all don't receive the same treatment? People of color do not receive the same treatment, especially Black women. This is not political, and this is not debatable. This is a real issue that is glossed over daily. Fight for your family, friends, neighbors, and especially strangers, because we can make that change together if we are compassionate towards everyone. It is hard to look inward, but please do. With that in mind, I will continue with today's case. Deidre Anna Reed was 41 years old and the mother of three children in Pageland, South Carolina. She had 11 siblings and was very close with all of her family. Her brother James said that he and Deidre talked 2 to 3 times a day, and she kept the family together. Her family told WBTV that Deidre was outgoing, the life of the party, an amazing cook, and always made people feel welcomed at parties and events. She would cook the family Sunday dinners, and they would go and hang out frequently. Her family also said that Deidre was loving and nurturing and was always with her kids. Deidre's sister Jamie said Deidre would do anything for them. She was always in contact with her family. Personally, she sounds like an amazing woman and mother. When I looked at her pictures, I could just tell she was kind and a warm person. Deidre was also in touch with her ex-boyfriend, 28-year-old Emmanuel Bedford, who was the father to Deidre's 7-year-old son, her youngest child. Emmanuel lived in Augusta, Georgia, about a 2 to 3 hour drive south of Pageland. I haven't read anywhere that Emmanuel was a bad father or abusive to Deidre, but we never know what happens behind closed doors. I did find Emmanuel was arrested twice before 2021, once in 2013 for possession of marijuana, which I personally believe is a bogus charge, which I won't get into today, and another time in 2017 for DUI, open container, and his car not having headlights. On September 3rd, Deidre had a busy day ahead of her. She planned to drop Emmanuel Bedford off at the Greyhound bus station in Uptown Charlotte, North Carolina, who was returning to Augusta, Georgia, where he lived. She planned to meet up with her sister Tina and Charlotte to go shopping afterwards. Deidre dressed up casually in gray sweatpants, a light pink and white shirt, and white Air Force One shoes. She walked out of her home in Pageland, got in her 2004 gray Chevrolet Tahoe, and drove off to the bus station. At this point, Tina had waited and waited for Deidre to show, but she never did. She called Deidre multiple times until she began to get worried, so she called their brother James to see if he heard anything from her. Of course, James said that Deidre was probably okay, but you need to understand that no one ever wants to assume the worst when people don't show up or you haven't heard from someone. Tina couldn't shake the feeling that something didn't feel right. Like I said earlier, Deidre was always in contact with her family and she wouldn't have stood up Tina like that. Deidre's sister Jamie said that it wasn't like Deidre to simply disappear, so the family began to get really concerned. A quote from Jamie from WCNC, "We were on it. It didn't take us long. We knew right away. It's one of those things where you have a gut feeling." Deidre's family began to look up recent car accidents in the area they knew she would be to figure out what happened to her, but nothing came up. They went to the police station after 24 hours and filed a missing persons report for Deidre. I couldn't find out whether or not they went to the police sooner and were turned away and told to wait after 24 hours, but I am pretty sure that happened. It happens way too often, and we all know now, thanks to crime shows and basic knowledge, that when someone goes missing, people have to fight to file their missing persons report before 24 hours has passed. And just a heads up, if you are 100% certain your loved one is missing, there is no law or rule that you have to wait after 24 hours. It is a myth. If the police tell you that, it isn't true, and just keep fighting. You know your loved one better than they do. I have no idea why police say this, because we know that the first 24 hours are so crucial in looking for a missing person. And the longer they are missing, the more likely they are dead. And that was not to victim blame her family. That's just happens so often. Either way, after 24 hours, police began looking for Deidre. Pageland police shared a post on their Facebook page, including Deidre's pictures, the description of what she was last seen wearing, where she was last seen, and what she was driving, which I had already said earlier. I will post the poster on social media and on the show notes of the episode on the blog. When Deidre's family reported her missing, they told police that she was supposed to take Emmanuel to the Greyhound bus station. Emmanuel told enforcement that Deidre dropped him off at the bus station between 1:50 and 2 p.m. After that, he never saw her again. Despite knowing that Emmanuel was the last person to see Deidre before she had gone missing, police said he was not a person of interest, even over the next couple of weeks. A couple of days after her disappearance, Deidre's family offered up a $10,000 reward for any lead that would help find Deidre. WSOC-TV reported that Deidre's two oldest children had lost their father a couple of months earlier and that they needed Deidre. She was the first person they went to for help for anything, and this was the longest they had been away from their mother. A multi-state search went underway to look for Deidre since she was last seen in Pageland, South Carolina, and was supposed to be in Charlotte, and the last person to see her lives in Augusta, Georgia. At this point, Pageland police sent out a picture of Deidre's SUV and gave the license plate details in hopes someone saw it or would see it anytime soon. Police believed that finding this car would be a major break for their case. In the weeks that followed, without any new information from police or from Emmanuel, Deidre's family posted to social media and handed out flyers to try to get any tips leading to Deidre. I watched a clip from the Pageland Police Facebook where her family went live and asked the public to help look and come forward with any information on Deidre or Emmanuel. They all held a flyer with Deidre's info and asked to bring her home. What was weird was that 2 weeks after Deidre disappeared, Emmanuel hadn't called his son or Deidre's family to tell them what he knew or even see if they were all right or needed support. Deidre's family thought this was weird as well, and James told WCNC that if Emmanuel was truly looking for her, he should contact law enforcement to try to clear his name. A quote from James Reed to WSCOW-TV, "It's sad that he was the last person to see my sister alive, and he's not a person of interest. It hurts the family to hear law enforcement keeps repeating that over the television." On September 23rd, the Pageland Police Department sent out a news release identifying Emmanuel Bedford as a person of interest. It is disappointing they didn't do this first with the information they had. Deidre's family believed that Deidre's disappearance mirrored Gabby Petito's disappearance, yet Deidre's case wasn't national news like Gabby's. Regular listeners to the show know my thoughts on how Gabby's case was horrible and awful, and she absolutely deserved the media attention her case got. And just know that I'm fully aware that she is a victim to something she definitely did not deserve. But I also feel that the media was not covering cases like Deidre's like they should have. And police didn't list a person of interest in Deidre's case as fast as police had in Gabby's case. We knew instantly that Gabby and her car went missing and the last person to see Gabby was her boyfriend, Brian Laundry. We knew that in Gabby's disappearance, before her body was found, that Brian had something to do with it. Like I said, lots of details in Gabby Petito's case mirrored Deidre and Destiny Smothers, a case I covered in May. Just a recap of Destiny's case, she disappeared after she left a bowling alley in Queens, New York with her boyfriend Kareem Flake. She apparently stormed out of the vehicle and left behind her belongings, but that is not what happened. Kareem lied to everyone about that detail, and police found their abandoned car with Destiny's body in the trunk. Before they found her body, Kareem was also not a person of interest. In Deidre's case, Emmanuel acted suspiciously, canceled his bus ticket, and was the last person to see Deidre. Her car was missing at this point of time. How was Emmanuel not a person of interest from the beginning? James Reed told WSOC-TV that he was grateful police were now focused on Emmanuel, and it took a lot of pressure off the family. I imagine that the pressure they had knowing Emmanuel knew something and the police hadn't named him was absolutely crushing. I just personally feel that they had enough to say he was a person of interest from the very beginning. In the release, they also confirmed that, quote, multiple aerial and land searches, including helicopters, drones, foot and ATVs, had been conducted in several key locations throughout the entire investigation. They were still actively looking for Deidre, and now Emmanuel to question him again. There are some cases where a family has to do police work themselves, right? In one report from WBTV, they said James reviewed surveillance video from the Charlotte Greyhound bus station, but they didn't say if police had found it and then showed James to ID Emmanuel, or if James found it first and then informed police. Either way, surveillance footage taken from the bus station revealed that Deidre's SUV with her inside and alive had made it to the station. When they arrived, Emmanuel got out of the car, walked into the station, and showed his phone to a staff member. Police thought he got a refund for his ticket because the staff member handed him cash. He then walked out of the station, back to the car, and got in the passenger side. The SUV then pulled off. After that, the trail went cold. Police were also working with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department to gather more footage from that area. Warrants went out for Emmanuel's arrest on October 8, 2021 by Pageland Police on suspicion of grand larceny and obstructing justice. According to WRDW, he turned himself in when he learned of these charges. A couple days later, on October 11th, Emmanuel was taken into custody by Burke County Sheriff's Office. James Reed told WBTV in response to Emmanuel's arrest that Deidre's youngest was so confused about why his mom went missing. Quote, "He dreams about his dad standing over her. He's just petrified right now. He just doesn't understand why someone who says they love him would take his mother away from him." Emmanuel was extradited back to Pageland, South Carolina in December 2021 and was denied bond. It would be several more months before more details were shared with the public about the process it took to arrest Emmanuel. On February 11, 2022, Chesterfield Judge Paul Birch denied bond for Emmanuel and said the evidence presented to him in court gave him reason to believe Emmanuel was a flight risk. Prosecutors said that Emmanuel was seen on surveillance video at a York County gas station driving Deidre's car. She was not seen in the video. According to WBTV, the missing 2004 Chevy Tahoe that Deidre was last seen in was found partially submerged in a pond in Aiken County, Georgia on September 5th. This pond is 11 miles away from where Emmanuel lived in Augusta. Pieces of the bumper were found on Emmanuel's family's land in Burke County. Pageland PD and the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division connected with the Aiken County Sheriff's Office to retrieve the car. When investigators looked inside, they found blood on the passenger seat. They sent blood samples to the State Law Enforcement Division lab, but the results had not come back during the time they held court for Emmanuel's bond. Deidre's family sat in the courtroom while being presented with the evidence. The evidence was shocking to everyone, especially with all the work placed into making posters to find the car. Emmanuel's father also attended the hearing but did not speak to the media. According to WSCO-TV, Emmanuel's lawyer, Josh Kroger Jr., argued for Emmanuel's bond by saying that he had already spent months in jail on charges that qualified for bond, but thankfully, the judge looked at the evidence and made a decision by how damning it was, which was my wording. He did say that he was going to deny bond until they met again on April 4th. Deputy Solicitor Gennard Raymond also planned to add more charges when the grand jury met again on March 10th. For those of you that aren't aware of what a deputy solicitor means, because I didn't, the definition pulled from HG.org states that a solicitor, quote, is a lawyer who gives legal advice and represents the clients in the courts. They deal with business matters, contracts, conveyance, wills, inheritance, etc. So they work with any legal matter as well as represent the clients in the courts, end quote. On March 10th, the grand jury indicted Emmanuel on charges of first-degree murder and kidnapping. According to Deputy Solicitor Raymond, evidence that was uncovered during the investigation was presented and led to the indictment. While waiting for April 4th, Deidre's family held a vigil on Deidre's birthday and released balloons in her honor. James said that this was the first time they celebrated her birthday without her. I watched the news story that covered the vigil and I was happy to see so many supporters of the family come out and celebrate Deidre's life. Deidre was such a good person and deserved to have her life celebrated in the way she would have wanted it, by bringing people together. On April 4th, Emmanuel appeared in court to argue to be let go on bond, but he was denied once again. According to WBTV, his lawyer argued that the evidence was circumstantial, that there was no telling who could have had access to Bedford's car when it was impounded for 3 months. He argued that there were sightings reported at the end of September of Deidre that were not investigated. His last argument was that social media and social media reports had made Emmanuel's stay in jail dangerous for him. Emmanuel had not said anything to law enforcement over the last 6 months about where he hid Deidre's body. Her family told WBTV that they didn't believe she was alive and that Emmanuel knew exactly what happened to her. They hope that they can receive closure from Emmanuel. James had previously said to WJBF, quote, "No matter what we've linked the chain back together, we've always known that chain was broken in the middle." Another quote from WBTV, "This just feels like it's not real. I hate that we have to go through this. I wish my sister would just come back. We all have that feeling deep down inside that we just know she's no longer with us." The bond hearing date was also Emmanuel's arraignment, which means that he was officially charged with murder and kidnapping. He pleaded not guilty to both charges and asked for a jury trial. James told WCNC, "He took a lot from us. Our family had been disoriented since she's been gone. I don't know how somebody could be that cold. Deputy Solicitor Raymond said that he hopes that they can have a trial soon since most of the evidence had already been presented. I am sure that evidence takes a while to be processed and a judge has to decide what is allowed to be presented to the jury. I will update the episode when we get more updates on when the trial will be held, if Emmanuel is found guilty, and if he is, when the sentencing hearing is, and for how long he will be put away. I think I will wait until we know the latter so that the episode is concluded. There is a GoFundMe to help care and support Deidre's children. I will link this in the show notes and blog. Also, please do some research into her case and other women like it. Their stories need to be seen, heard, and shared. I feel for her family, and I feel so terrible for her children. Their mother, sister, and daughter are gone. And for what? Hopefully, Emmanuel comes out and says what he did, because even though he hasn't been found guilty yet, I personally feel that he had something to do with her disappearance, especially with the evidence and information we have now. I hope that y'all have a good rest of your week, and please stay safe out there, spread kindness, and be compassionate to others. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Crime Cloud. If you would like to access my Instagram, go to @CrimeCloudPodcast. And for my Twitter, go to @CrimeCloudPod. To find the blog, go to CrimeCloudPodcast.blog. To email suggestions or corrections, use CrimeCloudPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening and supporting the podcast.